listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here, on my right, is the one and only Bobby Osinski. Bobby, welcome.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Next to him, we've got Mr. Soundman himself, Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike.
And across the table from him, we've got the Trailer King, Brandon Bertow.
What's up, Mike?
And next to Brandon, I wish I had a drum roll.
We have the Trailer Dweller.
The one and only Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike. Am I not the Iron Man this week?
Remember we were trying to look for something else.
Oh, okay. I'm the Trailer Dweller. Trailer Dweller. It's good to be here.
It's good to see you again.
Hey, the Roach Rob. Coaches have been doing really well, so now we can do the Audio Coaches.
There you go.
And nice. To a town near you.
There you go.
It'd be hugely popular.
There you go. No.
Mobile recording.
Well, hey, guys, this is show number 95. 95. Ooh, wow. We are inching our way.
I'm feeling really old.
Towards 100. That's amazing. It's amazing that this is show number 95.
That is pretty amazing.
But the cool thing is, you know, we've got new friends like Bobby and Brandon, and so it's cool. I'm enjoying it. Anyhow,
Brandon wasn't born when we started.
I'm only six right now, actually.
It all started on a dinner.
He's a very advanced six, though.
But, so on today's podcast, we're going to be talking about a few things. Right off the bat, though, we're going to start with the with an AAS show. We're going to talk about the AAS show. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Pro Tools and Pro Tools 9, because that's really pretty darn significant in the industry itself. Then we're going to answer some questions. And then we're going to have a few other topics that we're going to bring up, and that should take us through the show. But first of all, how many of you guys made it out to AAS? I was out there. Did you read, Rob? Did you go out there? Did you
No, I was stuck here working.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. I was there.
I was there too.
We were there in spirit.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about AES. AES this year was it was on the small side as far as booth space goes. There's about 8 aisles worth of booths. And the very at the beginning of the show, it looked like it could have been not disastrous, but really sparse. But then Friday really kicked up, and there was a lot of activity on Friday, I found out. A lot of professionals, a lot more of people looking to buy stuff. It looks like, you know, the economy is it seems like it's picking up a little bit just because of the nature of the customers that were coming into the different booths and things like that. And I know there was some console manufacturers that were selling consoles and making some deals, so that was kind of cool. Overall, it turned out to be a pretty decent AES show. There's some really great stuff there. Bobby, what did you think about the AES show, just the general vibe of it?
The vibe was interesting because, for the most part, there were a lot of people there that were not as negative as they were last year. The mood was fairly upbeat, but I think mostly it was people accepting of the fact of their financial lot in life right now. So where, you know, in the past it was a lot of woe is me, the sky is falling. This year it's like, well, okay, this is the lot we live in, so let's just move on with it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of acceptance, and I thought that was kind of cool, actually.
That's a great word, acceptance, because, yeah. I could definitely see that. Now, gear-wise, did you see anything that kind of caught your eye?
Well, Pro Tools 9 made a buzz unlike I haven't seen in a show in 10 years. What we've seen in most gear shows for a long, long time has been evolution rather than revolution.
Right.
So something comes out, it has a new feature, it has another bell and whistle. Different with Pro Tools 9, even though it is an evolution, but there is a huge buzz, and manufacturers wanted to jump on board because they could for the first time.
Right.
And that was the real big deal. Other than that, of course, there was a lot of new microphones. There was a lot of new speakers, and everybody had, kind of new stuff. There's two products in particular that kind of jumped out at me. One only because of kind of the audacity of it was Neumann came out with a line of loudspeakers.
Wow.
Neumann loudspeakers.
Neumann loudspeakers.
However, they were actually rebranded K&H, Klein & Hummels.
Interesting.
But they now are called Neumann.
How'd they sound?
Pretty good, actually. They're pretty good. Focal also had an interesting new speaker that had a loudspeaker. It had a woofer on top. And it was, you're able to refocus it, they call it refocusing, but essentially you'd be able to take it from two-way, three-way to two-way, and the two-way sounded more like an NS-10, for those of you who wanted an NS-10 sound. So that was kind of interesting, and it did sound good.
So it's a way to get that NS-10 sound, but spend five times as much?
Absolutely. Figured out how to do it.
That's a revolution right there.
Yeah, there you go. The other thing I thought that was really neat was, our friends at AEA, Wes Dooley, came out with one of the reproduction of the very first, one of the very first ribbon mics called the KU4, which was, believe it or not, a cardioid ribbon mic.
And
it came out in 1939.
Wow.
And it kind of looks like a shoebox. It's kind of funny looking. And there are only a handful of them made, but it was kind of like rare and legendary. And now he reproduced it, and like everybody's raving about it.
How does it sound?
I don't know. I didn't hear it.
But it was kind of cool.
And was he wearing the hat?
He's got to.
Yeah, it's okay. Wes.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah. And then other than that, there's lots of little direct boxes I thought were cool, you know, and just stuff that jumped out that was cool and quirky. And
did Altarup show anything new?
I didn't see them, to be honest with
either.
You.
I know at the NAMM show they were showing Altarup 7 last year.
Yeah.
But it hasn't come out yet.
I didn't even see them there, did you?
No.
They may wait for NAMM then.
There wasn't a lot of Waves, was it there? There wasn't a lot of software there. Soundtoys was there. Isotope was there.
Yeah.
But you didn't see, it's not, you know, there wasn't a row of.
Universal Audio wasn't there.
Yeah, Universal Audio wasn't there. I think they tend to go towards the NAMM show. I don't know. Yeah. You don't see
these shows are so expensive. Yeah. It's understandable.
And with companies, you know, and you got and you get NAB if you're in broadcast.
Yeah.
So
Well, cool. Anything else that caught your eye? Was that about it?
Yeah, that's about it. I can't think of anything else that really knocked me. Well, consoles as well. I had a wonderful talk with Malcolm Toft. Malcolm Toft of Malcolm Toft and Trident. They had a new Trident Model 82, which was the direct descendant of the Series 80, you know, and it's a new version. And I happened to get to talking to him, and he gave me the whole history of Trident consoles, which was very interesting, and how they're kind of designed by mistake, by accident almost, out of need, because they couldn't find a console manufacturer that would make them what they needed. So I had to build, and it wasn't that they wouldn't make it. It was the fact that they only had a limited amount of space. Nobody could make a console that would fit in their space. They had to do it themselves.
It's pretty ballsy that they're still doing it, actually.
Yeah.
And you know those
the Series B, baby.
The TOF consoles they're gorgeous looking, boy. You see those little the 16 or 24 channel ones.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just gorgeous looking.
It's killer.
The wood trim on the sides and the knobs and everything. It's nice looking.
And the EQ is like the Series 80. It's very responsive. It really sounds good for this, you know, relatively inexpensive little desk.
But the Trident was mostly a good tracking console, wasn't it?
The sound of rock and roll.
Yeah.
Had that rock. And Malcolm said it was because they were rock and roll engineers, and that's why they kind of made everything by ear. They said that they tuned all the EQs by ear. They would do the EQ. They'd design it. They'd bring it in, and Roy Baker and Ken Scott and a third guy, I can't remember who it was, they would all listen and give their suggestions, and that's how they
So I remember when I used to do my stint at Cherokee. There used to be a lot of API and Trident.
The Series 80. Me too.
Yeah.
Grew up on that.
Yep.
And, of course, there were TSMs and mostly TSMs all over town at one point.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, cool. I mean, for me, one of the highlights of AES is I got to talk to Chris Estes for about 10, 15 minutes. And he's with Endless Analog and the inventor of the class system, which basically what the class system allows you to do is use your 24-track tape machine almost as an effect insert in your Pro Tools session where you send your audio –
that your recording goes into the clasp, it goes into your record head, gets picked up immediately by your playback, and it sends it back into Pro Tools. And it immediately lays it down and picks it back up. So there is nothing that's kept on the tape. It's all in and out really fast, but it allows you to do the tape sound, have the saturation, all of that.
And it time aligns it afterwards, right? Does it delay compensate?
For the
delay between the record and repro head?
It must.
I would think it must.
Yeah. I mean, it's the little box, and you're paying, you know, $7,500 for it. But the cool thing.
I would think it does.
Yeah, it better. But the cool thing is it works, and it controls the tape machine, and also it only, since you're not ever storing anything on tape, you don't have to worry about rewinding or fast forward. You don't have to jog your tape machine because it's just in and out, in and out, in and out. So
wait, I'm missing something here. What is the difference between just feeding audio into the tape machine and then playing it off the playhead?
If you do that, though, you're going to have that latency.
Yeah, so what does this do then?
I don't know what it does. It just does that in a cool way.
Yeah, it lays it down. It
must have the playhead really close to the recording,
yeah,
so there's no...
Well, it starts and stops the tape machine for one thing, so you don't have to leave the tape machine running all the time or run it separately.
So it's an audio chamberlain.
Right, and it also...
Kind of.
And it also, you know, arms your tracks and does
and is
all
it
that.
Loop? Is it reels or is
no,
it
No, it's
loop?
It's reels of tape that you... Since you're only running in one direction because you don't have to jog forward or backwards. Because remember, you're laying it down and picking it up at the same time.
Right.
So you're only using the tape.
But it does. It must rewind the tape. It must know when to rewind the tape.
It has a countdown, and you know how much tape you have left and that whole thing.
So is it using 2-inch tape?
It's using 2-inch tape. And the thing about it, too, is, according to Chris, is you can reuse the tape since you're not jogging it forward and backwards. You're just constantly playing it forward. The tape lasts longer. So
is it in a loop?
No, it's regular 2-inch reels, so it'll show you, you know, how much time you
have. So you have to buy it, like, go buy some FX 456 and...
You gotta buy tape, yeah. You're using your tape machine, and so that's the thing.
Do they supply the tape machine, or...
No. You have to have
it. Oh, so those people, they already have a tape machine.
Exactly.
It's a controller.
You know what it is? You buy this box
for it,
you are committed to your tape machine. If you had a tape machine in your studio and you wanted to use it and you wanted to use it in a more convenient way.
That's probably with the sync head. That's how they're doing it.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the thing about it is once I kind of got this understanding of how it works and you see this whole thing, two things popped into my mind. I think it's really cool that it's kind of going to give second life to a lot of tape machines. But, man, it just seems like an awful lot of work nowadays for that sound where, I don't know. I don't know if there's other ways we can get that sound. I don't know if you still want that sound. I mean, I would think a really well-mic'd, you know, session with a band, you know, done cleanly would sound
of course
really good, too.
You know what? I mean... You have to know what your audience is. I mean, this is the kind of thing you get to impress yourself because most of the industry or most of your audience would never be able to hear the difference. I mean, just from a practical standpoint.
Any kind of compression, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to, if people want that sort of tape compression, these days there are plenty of other ways to get that sound.
And that was actually going to be one of my questions for you guys what do you guys think of that concept in general in the home?
I mean, I'm always interested in hearing somebody come up with a new way to do something, and that's interesting, and it makes for an interesting experiment. But, you know, I can't imagine these things are going to be flying off the shelf.
I've only heard one album that was done with that, and I'll be honest, it's Michael W. Smith, who's a Christian artist. It's his latest album, and it sounded a little foggy, and – And that's
not, what tape does.
I mean. Right, right. And the thing is you're so used to hearing all these pristine recordings now when you go back there and you
Yeah, but then what you could do is use a whole bunch of plugins to get rid of the tape noise.
Well, that's what people go, oh, I remember the old days, like records. I remember hissing, crackling, and skipping, and the low end. And
yeah, well, maybe clasp two will hook to a wax cylinder recorder.
make everything sound like a dictaphone from the 60s. That'd
well,
be great.
You know, it's so funny you bring that up because it's like I was talking to another friend of mine. And it's like just because it's analog and it's the way it was doesn't necessarily mean it's better. And you know, we recorded back then because that's all we had. That's the way it was.
Have you played with analog channel?
No.
There's a plugin called Analog Channel, and it's actually quite fascinating because it has 15 IPs, 7 IPs, 30 IPs. Or 7.5, I guess. And then it's like European, American, over-biased, under-biased, what kind of tape. And they go through the whole thing. And it's interesting, when you hear it, you go, oh, yeah, I remember this sound. I like it.
Right.
Because all of a sudden,
how hard we used to work to not have that sound.
Yeah, it kind of made things go splat.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you want punch, and sometimes it's nice. And sometimes it just added a level of, like, fog, yeah, lack of detail, lack of punch, lack of, you know, lots of things that I think we've become kind of accustomed to now. It's a great tool when you need it, but
right.
it's, you know.
I just see it. I see it going into some bigger studios that have the machine, and it's just going to be another service that they can offer. But to me, boy, just getting back in there and time, you know, and setting up all your 24 track and you know doing all the tape adjustments and all the head alignment and all that.
Just, you know what? Even without all of that, even if it was just snap your fingers and it's set up, I just think that there are plenty of ways today to get things sounding punchy. And if you want it to pump like a compressor and you want it to have some of what you think you like, you know, about remembering what the sound used to be,
right. There
are ways to do all that now.
Yeah.
And this is just, I mean, it's just an odd
solution.
You
know what's great, though, I've been seeing is, as you guys know, and I've been speaking a little bit about like the boutique guitar amps, what I'm also seeing is it got to the point where Pro Audio went away when the 24-track and the consoles kind of went away.
Right.
And then Pro Tools took on, and that kind of dominated. But now what I'm kind of seeing, again, is boutique Pro Audio.
Right.
Where people realize, you know what, a good mic pre gets you a long way going into some hardware to record into Pro Tools. So whether it's, was it Charter Oaks and all these little companies.
That were all at AES.
Yeah.
But they have a passion. They say, look, we're not going to make a lot of money, but for those people that really care, and this device, by the way, is $5,000 and $10,000, there's this little boutique-y thing where it's a small company, you know, 2-3 guys. They make their things. A lot of the 500 series little modules that come in. And I think that's great. I think people that are really audio heads.
Well, you know, speaking of which, I just thought of another product, a quirky product that kind of jumped out, and I can't remember the name of the company, but it was a mic preamp that kind of looked like an LA-2 in an LA-2 box. And it put out 1 watt of output. And the guy was really proud of this, and he said, look, you can plug your headphones right in, and you don't need an amplifier in between. It's loud enough that you can just hear it off of the mic amp, you know. And it had 2 volume controls, 1 for each gain stage. So it was like a master volume control on your guitar amp, you know, so you can overdrive on stage and everything. But it's very boutique-y, you know. And it was one of those things where if you want that sound, if you want that capability, and if you want to drive a cable a mile into your DAW, it's there.
Yeah, you know, you saw a lot of that over at AES. And I think the cool thing, I was talking actually to my trade show friend, I call him Joe Ciccarelli, because I see him at all the trade shows. Hey, Joe, you know, when are you going to come on the podcast? You know, I was talking to Joe and I asked him, I said, hey, so what do you think about the clasp? And it was all kind of the same things about, oh, it's, you know, good to hear about the tape and the whole thing. But then he said, you know, I don't know if my clients, you know, well, nobody's asked for that for one thing, or if they're just willing to go through all that hassle again is what we're talking about, you know. So I think it's going to be a boutique thing that you're going to see at some of the bigger studios. I think some of the guys in the younger studios probably might want to use it because, you know what, there's a whole generation of people who've never tracked on tape, you know, because you haven't had to track on tape in a long, long time. So maybe they're falling in love with the whole romance of the thing. But I think after, you know, this whole love fest kind of ends, it's, people are going to be going, you know, it's kind of a pain in the butt, you know, and I think, Rob, you're right, that there's just so many other ways to do it nowadays, mm-hmm. to get that sound.
It mm-hmm. almost seems like it's something for classic engineers, you know, who want to get that sound again, who kind of long for it, but anybody else that just started in the business, they haven't heard it, they don't care.
But there's also that's what the IO modules, though, for now. A little mic freeze.
Yeah.
So you got, well,
realistically, though, I mean, the only thing that it gives you that the plugins wouldn't probably authentically enough that no one could tell the difference is the noise of the tape. I mean, the compression has been pretty much modeled to death. There are ways to get that.
Yeah.
It's the noise that is really the only thing that it's going to give you that the plugin may not. And there's a way to do that, too. But just
everyone forgets, you know, like 24 or 22 tracks, it depends on how you're using it, and 48 tracks was huge.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Well, now you start doing tapists of 200 plus tracks. Yeah. You know, that's why noise gates were invented. I mean, it was like, it's just like, exactly.
Yeah, now, I mean, for $7,500, you can get the clasp system, and then they, for another $7,500, they should just, like, unhook it for you when you realize how much you hate it.
Now, I came from the world after tapes. Mm-hmm. But maybe you guys can shed some light on this. Like, I've heard, you know, and read some things that people say, oh, that hiss that you're talking about is what sort of ties a mix together sometimes.
It's like glue. Dither. It's like dither noise.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what?
Is that desirable?
No.
That people get this device for that?
No. Well, I don't think it's the hiss so much. There is a certain glue.
And then you have Dolby SR that came in.
Yeah, but I don't even think it's that. There's a certain glue that you get from tape on a mix where things just sort of fit together a little better. But again, I think it's the natural compression that you're getting more than anything. And there are ways to get that. That's true these days. You have to work a little harder in order to get that same thing that naturally happened with tape. And that's what people miss, I think, more than anything. It's that glue. It just sort of comes together faster, you know, in a mix. If you listen to an individual track, I don't know that you'll say, oh, that sounds better or worse than something else. But it's when you put them all together, you go, oh, yeah, okay.
There's all these other things that happen too. There's crosstalk between the tracks. There's a lot of stuff, especially if it takes a little longer.
And some kind of distortion that's pleasant.
Sure.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of messy stuff like that. But, you know, in the hands of a great engineer, the digital stuff, you're not missing anything from the tape. You're not. I mean, it's maybe hard to get it takes a lot of work to maybe get that exact same sound as tape, but it can be done. And personally, $7,500 is a lot of money. For $7,500, you can buy a whole lot of
plugins. $7,500 if you already own a machine?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Then if you don't own a machine, then you got to buy the machine.
Yeah.
Which is $7,500. Because
someone will pay you.
Yeah. The machine's $75.
$7,500 here, take it away.
And what does tape go for a reel nowadays?
That's about $14,000.
Then you can find it.
That plug-in is sounding pretty good.
and then you need that tech guy to go... It's not working anymore.
The pain in the ass of biasing a tape machine.
Yeah.
That's one thing I never want to do again. I never want to think about it. I never want anybody else to do it either.
Well, you know what, though? With this system...
1K.
In fairness...
100 hertz.
But the truth is, with this system, it's not like you ever need to play this tape back on any other thing. So as long as the play and record heads are kind of close... You know, they're not going to drift all that much. Once it's set up, you probably set it and forget it. Because it doesn't actually matter if it's standard biasing. It just has to be in match to out.
They glued together a bunch of cassette tapes.
All right. Well, I think we've covered that. And so it was...
I think we've buried it more than covered it.
Just a couple of other things I wanted to talk about. I went over and visited our good friend Martin from Plus 24.
Yes, Martin Uchik.
Yeah, Martin Uchik, and got to demo some of the microphones. And usually, I have to admit, I go over to the Sanken booth and I'm falling. and I'm falling in love with the 100K mic because that's my next mic. But apparently that's not my next mic because I fell in love with the CSS5 shotgun mic. And it's just – it's such a great – I mean, first of all, their shotgun mics are amazing. I had never really done a test. And so we had the CS3.
What's a stereo shotgun?
Which stereo shotgun?
Yes, the stereo shotgun mic you're talking about.
It's the surround shotgun, right?
No, that's a different one.
No, the CSS5, but the cool thing
about the CSS5 is stereo shotgun.
Oh, okay.
I own three Sankins.
Yeah,
so.
it has the mono part of like the CS3, and then you can turn on the stereo part, so you get this very focused mono.
It's mono, normal, wide.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, and the pickup was just amazing. I mean, it was loud, it was noisy, and he was standing about maybe 15 feet from me, and I was pointing the mic at him, and I could pick him up. Mm-hmm. Just regular shotgun. It had great noise cancellation of all what was around, and then we turned on the stereo and. Boom, you got the ambience, but you could still hear him.
Right.
So if you were doing, let's say, sound effects, you want to go outside and do a recording of like nature and things like that, I mean, you'd be able to point it at whatever bird or whatever animal you're trying to pick up and then get the whole ambience around and be able to control that. And
is it an MS mic?
It's an MS mic with a Dakota built into it.
Oh.
Okay. I mean, the mics that, to me, that compete probably for that, because I got a whole bunch, I have a huge mic collection. I have a CSS5, also the Neumann 191 is also a big competitor. They have different flavors. It's a Gibson Fender kind of thing. I think Neumann's got a little more low end. The imaging, the sides on the Sankin are a little, I think it's a little nicer on the stereo imaging. The Neumann's got a big, deeper sound, kind of like the Gibson. It's a nice fuller sound. The sides are okay, but it's super clean. So if you're in, you're in a dead room, there's just no mic noise. There's nothing. I mean, that's what it's the KMA. It's basically the Neumann side. But they're all really good. I mean, I'm a huge Sankin fan, obviously.
Yeah, it was really amazing how well that sounded. I was just amazed at how much the ambience kind of filled in. Around what you were shooting on the shotgun, and it was very pleasant. It was like, you know what, this sounds real. I mean, I could see where you would want to do this when you wanted to have a real authentic sound of your whatever your actor or your focus point was, and then the ambience around it. It just made a lot of sense the way it was working.
They have a 5-channel mic, which I've got, and we've also over at Sonix we have the DPA 5-channel, and it's been really fascinating to hear the difference. And the Sankin, one thing I like about the Sankin, it's amazingly focused. It's like a very tight cardioid, almost hyper, where literally if I face it at you and Rob talks, I won't hear him. I'll hear him on the right channel, you'd be in the center, and then as I shift it. So what's great is the shifting and the imaging is really nice. The DPA is much more rounder. It's not as tight. So if you want, let's say like for orchestra, and you don't want to only hear that string over to the right, but you want to get a flow, it's a little bit more rounder, a little more blend, a little more fuzzy in a very pleasant way. Both really great mics. Just depends on what you're looking for.
Yeah, it's amazing when you actually go out and listen to some of these mics, how your creative juices start flowing. Because once I started hearing all the different microphones, and especially when I heard that, the CSS5, it's like my brain just like, man, I'd love to take it here and do this and shoot that and do this. And then I was just really jealous of your job, Scott. I'll just tell you that right off the bat, man. To play with all those microphones. So that was kind of cool.
So now you've got to go out, get like Sound Devices 8-channel.
Oh,
And then what you do is you have, because when we go on, we use 20 mics for that very reason.
Right.
We don't know what's going to really sound great. And this way we,
the Sound Devices boxes are awesome.
They're fantastic.
They're built so well. I was actually going to mention that because they're built so well. The 8-track one with the little mixer that's underneath it, just such a gorgeous recorder. I mean, that and the mics that you talk about, it's I'd be recording everything just because I could.
You know, I've got a 744. The sound device is just, they have a mic pre called a 322 that's got an analog limiter built into it that is fantastic. Because what's difficult in digital is what happens, especially when you record sound effects,
right.
If the sound gets away, you didn't know it gets louder, all of a sudden, what do you do? And Sound Devices has just a beautiful analog limiter in it that's very pleasant sounding. So if all of a sudden it smashes into it, you don't get hash, it just has a really nice sound. The other big secret that everyone didn't know by accident was, I don't think you can get it, you can only get it used, Fostex made a recorder called an FR2.
Right.
The FR2. There's been other versions, but the FR2 has a mic pre in it that people are just trying to find the mic pre. Because, again, we were talking about just kind of distortions and stuff. I've done guns and trains and planes, NASCARs. And when I was doing Herbie, we did all these NASCARs with a Diva, a 744, and an FR2. And sometimes we even use the same mics in different places. The FR2's fat. It's got a limiter on it that's so pleasant. And it just, whatever you put in it, it's fat. So all these people would buy it, and they're just trying, like, can we get Fostex just give us the mic pre's? They came up with a cheaper version than the FR2. But for whatever reason, those mic pre's aren't in it.
Oh, no.
So if you can pick one up, and it was a really inexpensive box,
wow.
But you can find it, I recommend buying it.
Wow. I'll have to take a look, see if I can find it on eBay. Yeah, the sound devices, man, all their stuff. I spent some time just going through all the – they're just great little boxes.
Yeah.
I mean
– the mic pre is USB mic pre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just
awesome.
Great. They're built so well. I mean, you hold them and you touch them and you just
– I mean, you're meant to be jogging, banging in 100-degree weather or freezing, and it just works.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And what was amazing is you see that and you go over to the Nagra, and they have some stuff there that's, you know, that's pretty cool. But it's just, I don't know, the sound devices stuff was way sexier, if a recorder can be sexy. Okay, maybe I got a little too close. But anyhow, that was kind of cool. A couple, you know, really quick, there was this Australian mic manufacturer called Bee's Knees. And they made – their microphones were just – they were built like a tank, and they had FET and tube and all a bunch of different mics. And really reasonably priced, sounded really good. And also there was a mic company called
– Was Bach Audio there?
Bach Audio was there.
Which, by the way, I want to put out, that's the old Sound Deluxe mics. David Bach.
Oh, David Bach, yeah.
Yeah, and he makes just wonderful sound.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
And then Mic Tech, which is a company in Nashville, they put out, I got to listen to them, and their mics are about $1,000 to $2,000, somewhere in there. And they have two mics, and they have the FET mics. And their mics, for what they were really reasonably priced. Like, their $1,200 microphone sounded just really amazing. Had a nice little bite, had a nice little warm low end. And, you know, there's a lot of great mics, like we've talked about on this show, you know, that $1,000 to like $3,000. I mean, there's just a ton of good mics in there, you know, and that's kind of like a good sweet spot, man. You have a lot of options if you want to have a high end mic and you don't want to spend the $10,000. But there's a lot of really cool microphones. It's a good time to be in
at all different prices. I got a chance to play with a bunch of Rode mics, and I originally wasn't even thinking. You know, Rode is just, you know, I wouldn't probably like it. But I was doing some Creature vocals for this movie that I'm on now, and I needed a mic that just didn't have a certain fidelity, but would work just exactly the way I needed it. And then, of course, you'd ask me which one it is, and I don't remember. It's a large diaphragm with all the little knobs on the front of it, probably an NT something something. But I tell you, it's just a wonderful little mic. It's not tube; it's the FET mic. Really nice.
You know, on a sidebar, someday we're gonna have to pick your brain about how you go about picking your mics for your different things in front of you.
Because with that wheel,
I don't know how to do it. Because like I'm trying all these mics, and it's just like. You know,
it's the same as plugins.
It's a
you
science.
You gotta know your tools.
You gotta know your tools. It's the same thing like an LA 2A 1176. Do you want to use the Oxford? plug-in for compression. To me, they all have very different sounds.
Yeah. No, I'm sure.
And you just get used to them. And what I recommend to anybody with microphones similar to, like, in any instrument, listen to it, play with it, know what it does, compare it against something you do know, and then you get an audio library in your head.
You know, that's important. You're right. Is the playing with it, because I got to really, since I wasn't working the AES show, I got to play with a lot of the gear, and it's so important to like you said, just play with it, record stuff, just talk stuff, you know, try it out, do all kinds of stuff, because you really can, you know, the numbers become less relevant, and what you hear becomes really relevant.
Well, you can talk about the CSS5, and we did a gun shoot probably a couple months ago, and someone said, hey, I heard someone was using a CSS5. I said, oh, I have one, but you never thought about using it for guns because it doesn't have low end. So we said, just take it out. Because, again, it doesn't cost you anything if a friend has it. Pocket another recorder. So we went out, and all of a sudden we used the CSS5. It was one of the best-sounding mics on that shoot.
Hmm.
And we were like, wow, who would have known? Because it doesn't have the attributes, so I always recommend to people, if you have something, we've also taken mini recorders, little Zooms and little Sonys, even though we knew it would blow out the mic, but sometimes it does it in a very pleasing way, and started using little handhelds in addition. So, yeah, we had like 30-some-odd mics. Wow. It was great.
Did API have anything new at the show?
Yeah, you know, API had some great stuff. They came out with a new lunchbox, which is really cool. It has more power to the rails, so you can start using some of the plugins. I mean, some of the plugins, some of the 500 series plugin modules that take
that more power.
Yeah, that need more power, and also has a DB25 connector on the back.
Oh, wow.
Which is really cool. And since you have a DB25 connector, they have, since it's only 6 slots, they have a 7 and 8 pass through. So you can wire your stuff up. So if you have all your 8 channels or whatever, you have a 7 and 8 pass through. And it's the same price as the other one. So that's pretty cool. They also have a new channel strip called the channel strip, which replaces the 7600, and essentially, the cool thing about this is you get, you know, the same mic pre and the same 550A EQ, but you get the 527 compressor with thrust technology in the.
And it's all one module?
Yeah, in one module.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a gem of a module.
Yeah.
That's going to be really cool. Well, I'll tell you what. Hey, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Pro Tools 9 a little more. And I want to get your guys' opinion on some of the things that I want to bring up. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to Yoni Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about the AES show and what we saw and some of the highlights and some of the, it was all highlights. But before we close this out, I do want to say, though, is that some of the manufacturers out there are just really producing, if not anything else, some really gorgeous looking gear. I mean, like Shadow Hills, they had some amazing stuff, and like the new API stuff and the Tough consoles, and it just seems like everybody's getting on their A game. They're really just producing some really good high end stuff that not only sounds good, but it looks good, and I think that's kind of cool, you know. And like I don't know who was saying it. Was that you, Scott, that were saying that you have all those auto work mill workers now?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because before you used to have the mass market console makers,
right?
And they kind of took over everybody, and then you had kind of boutique.
Yeah.
Well, now that's all gone, and everybody left is the boutique guys.
Right.
The guys that said, hey, you know, like we were talking about David Bach.
Right.
And it was interesting with David. David was one of our engineers at Soundlux. And he looked at our mic collection and said, you know, I can modify those and make them sound better. And we're like, really? So he did a couple, and we said, wow, they sound really good. And at one point we said, have you ever thought of maybe designing your own mics? And he said, absolutely. He would like to. And then he was so talented that he would look at all the great mics of yesteryear and say, this was a great mic, but this was the problem of that time. like the, some of the 251 issues. And he'd say, well, I could do that, but I could give it low end and I can give it, you know, make it less noisy or give it more punch or more dynamic range. And he would modify them, still keeping the color. And all of a sudden you got these amazing mics. And I think that I see that a lot happening in audio now where, again, a small group of people can come by, use the best products because they're not competing for the low end. So, and I kind of call it boutique audio.
Right.
But it's usually very, very, very good stuff.
Yeah. It all looks good. I mean, yeah. all the stuff that they have
out
there.
Got to sell your car. And then, you know.
Yes, but boy, will you ever sound good. Now, let's get back to one thing I wanted to talk about is Pro Tools 9. Over the show, they introduced Pro Tools 9. And what's really cool about Pro Tools 9 coming out is, number one, I think this is going to have some really positive reverberations throughout the whole industry, because what they did with Pro Tools 9 is they basically unlocked Pro Tools from its hardware. So now you can use any core audio sound device out there on Pro Tools. And that's really important because there is, you know, as much as people are polarized by Pro Tools, you know, you either really love it or you really hate it, you know, they're the boss, you know, they're the numero uno out there. And now I think what you're going to start seeing is you're going to start seeing audio interfaces come out from places that you've never seen before, that nor that you've never heard before, because now people have a reason to put an audio interface, because they can be compatible with Pro Tools 9. They don't have to compete with you know, the M-Box and their own hardware. And I think it's going to be really exciting for what's going to be going on. And I just wanted to get your guys' opinion. You know, let's start with you, Rob. And do you see what I'm talking about as far as how Pro Tools 9 being unlocked is could really have a positive effect throughout the industry?
Oh, I think it... Well, it'll have a positive effect. I mean, it's not like there are going to be a million new
right.
hardware manufacturers popping up to support it. But all the existing interface companies, you know, it's a good thing for them. I think it's a good thing for a lot of Pro Tools users. Let me put it this way. I think it least affects the high-end Pro Tools users, the ones with the giant HD rigs and the
right.
ones who need all that kind of power. Pro Tools 9 is not a real revolution for them. But for anybody using smaller systems, it is a revolution. And it is a cool thing. I mean, I've tried taking a big session that I have running on a big HD rig and then just opening up on a laptop with no hardware. And it'll sort of kind of play it. You know, the plugins aren't the same and, you know, it's not exactly the same. But if I had to do some basic editing or tweaking, you know, right. I can now do that, whereas, you know, before I couldn't do that at all.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big change. I don't think, like for our big sessions where we're using HD6 systems and that kind of stuff, it's not a massive release. I mean, there are some features that we'll use, but, this release is mainly about opening up the hardware. And I think, you know, for everybody using Hammerfall cards and the audio built into their laptops right. and all these other viable systems to be able to run full Pro Tools now, that's pretty major.
Motu must be loving this.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm saying.
Because with all their IOs, yeah.
Yeah, Motu would love any of
them. But I've heard, though, there are limitations in the fact that a native, I don't know if this is true, heard it today, that it only gives you 32 outputs, not 64. I don't know if that's true or not.
I think that's true.
Meanwhile, yes, because HD will give you 64, but this will limit you
but I don't
to
know,
32.
Is that a and I just don't know if that's a limitation of core audio drivers and things other than Pro Tools, or if Pro Tools 9 actually limits it. I just don't know.
I'll go and find out.
But I will say, actually, there is one revolutionary thing, though, that you may not affect that many people out there, but it definitely affects our industry in the film side, is they're now accepting Yukon control. And what's really important for the dubbing world is before, you needed a sidecar or you just didn't deal with it at all. Now all of the System 5 systems actually will control Pro Tools. So for those studios that have System 5s, which we have a lot, you can now just basically take your console and now you can control all the, just as good as an Nikon,
yeah.
you can control it all And for us, that's amazing because now the mixers can go back, use the summing amps of the Euphonics, which, you know, is a little bit better than in software, but at the same time be able to control plugins, and it's literally revolutionizing because some people have Neves, some have Harrisons, some have Euphonics. For those people that have Euphonics, all of a sudden it's at the edge because they basically just bought a giant icon.
Yeah, and actually they had a Series 5 mixer set up with Pro Tools, and it just looked gorgeous. It ran flawlessly. They were controlling it, all the parameters. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there's things that you could do on the Euphonics that's just, I mean, nothing that's been light years beyond the icon.
And just to answer your other question, it looks like it doesn't say how many outs you have, but you get on Pro Tools 9, you get 96 mono or stereo tracks right off the bat. 64 instrument tracks, 512 MIDI tracks. Boy, that would be a nightmare.
Now, originally, I saw an ad for 500
folders.
Here's a question. I heard you can do 512 tracks. Now, the question is, but you do 192 voices. So the question is, can you do 512 physical tracks, or is it 192? And I've seen this in two different places. And I don't have the answer to that.
You know what? I don't have the answer to that either.
Because I thought 192 already have it, so it's HD. It doesn't give me anything. Right. 512 tracks.
That would get you something.
That gives me the ability to categorize my design much better.
Yeah, except, you know what? And I'm not the first. I'm not in the first million people to complain about this, but with all of these tracks and no way to organize them into folders, it becomes just a joke. I mean, I for the last couple of days, have been scoring a spot, which I'll probably mention later, but I was doing some MIDI in Pro Tools and some audio in Pro Tools and, you know, orchestral stuff and a lot of tracks that need to just be logically grouped, which is what I would always do in Cubase or Nuendo.
Right.
Not even think about it. You know, throw the whole orchestra once it's built into a folder and then just close it so I don't have to look at it. And I found myself in Pro Tools just tripping over myself, scrolling through track after track.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so absolutely insane that there's no folders in the bin or in the tracks in Pro Tools. And they keep giving you more and more tracks, and they're not giving you any better way to organize
them. Right, you can't collapse them down. That's absolutely, I can't agree with you more.
But when you use an RTAS plugin, use up a voice.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens all of a sudden, you could blow through voices all really fast.
Yeah.
So if you're using a combination of TDM and RTAS, then you don't get your track count anymore.
Yeah.
And then you put speakerphone or two altiverbs on, and the system dies.
The system's going to crap out way before you run out of tracks in that situation anyway, because, I mean, compared to the power of like an HD6, the host-based systems are nowhere near
as
close.
Yeah, but for those, because I have an HD3 because of, it's more than most people
have.
Yeah,
but still, you're not going to be able to do everything an HD3 can do native yet. I mean, it's just not realistic.
Right. But it's right now what I find is if I can increase the track count, then that helps me a lot because I suck up art. I mean, 192, I'm lucky to get 120.
Tracks you get more tracks and less processing. I mean, it bounces out.
And I'm working with Martin in his studio right now, and we run out of voices all the time. And and he's just doing, you know, songs for stereo, you know, but he has a lot of between all his percussion and everything. We're running.
But hopefully, when you get to a 12 core, that gives you a lot more memory and a lot more processing. It hopefully alleviates that in theory, but we'll see.
You know, getting off the features for a second, I'm wondering what the end game is for Avid on doing this.
Yeah, how do you make money when you just take away your profit margin?
Yeah, because basically what they've always done is they've given away the software and they made their money on the hardware. You had to buy the hardware. And now that you don't have to buy the hardware, what is the long-term strategy on this? And I haven't gotten it yet.
I think what their strategy is, because I was talking to one of the guys from Avid, is they've put a value on their HD software. Their value is like $2,500. That's basically the value of their software because that's if you take the production pack plus the Pro Tools 9, it's about $2,500. And so they now have a hard value on the software. And what they're going with Pro Tools 9 is, you know, they're going after that Logic guy. They're going after that Cubase guy.
$400-$500 want to buy a ton of it.
I mean, what would you rather get? You know, you have $500. $600 gets you
Pro Tools and, you know, for all intents and purposes, real Pro Tools or Logic. It all depends on what you want to do. But I'll tell you what, if you want to get a job, if you want to work and get paid money, I'm buying the Pro Tools system.
They've come out also with some pretty cool new Pro Tools hardware.
Yeah.
And so you
but
can't
that's
discount.
For the high end.
Well,
no,
even
for
the
low end, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
the M-boxes or the new M-boxes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they compete at that low end and mid end.
It seems like they get high and low, and the mids, who wants to compete in?
No, they compete in mids, too.
I think the Omni would probably be in the mid section because it's...
It's not for mid, though. I was thinking that's pretty high. It's quality for 192,
well,
and the 192
either,
is the blackface.
Yeah,
whatever.
But you either need to have a native system, which is $3,500, or you need to have an HD, you know, any of the HD systems, which you get into around $7,000. So,
$7,000's expensive.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. It would be that I would consider that the low end of their mid. I think the low end is the.
But I agree with you because if you look at Post, when I was talking to them at different points in the last couple of years, post production was huge for them. I mean, all the studios were spending $1 million at a pop, you know, getting DigiDesign stuff, and or I guess now it's Avid. But then the churches, the big mega churches. Started buying a lot of venues and a lot of stuff. But what happens with all these companies, they reach saturation. You know, the Warner Brothers, the Soundluxes, the Universals, everyone's got what they need.
Yeah, right.
So we're still buying little bits here and there, but nobody's doing the big multi-million dollar purchases, at least for several more years.
Right.
So, and now the megachurch has already bought theirs, and they don't need to replace it. Now the question is, where do you go from here? And it is true, because everybody that I know went out and bought Logic. Whether they want it or not. Just because it was really cool, it was only $400, and why not?
Right.
So when we went out and get it, and I think the Digi, you know, Casio made a lot of money on their watches, and you start buying, you know, building for quantity.
Right. No, I think it's definitely going to, you know, they're not the cheapest, you know, even with this standalone version, you know, you get a basic package of effects and things like that in Pro Tools, but you figure right now, like Sweetwater is doing a deal that if you buy the upgrade and then you add their instrument pack, that's only going to cost you a couple $100 more. So let's say you upgrade for $200, $300, and the instrument pack's another couple $100. So $600, you're upgrading from like an LE system. You get Structure, you get Strike, you get Hybrid, you get some pretty cool, you know, instruments to go with real Pro Tools. That's
you know what? They don't have to be the cheapest because they're the standard.
Right.
I mean, there is a value to spending a little bit more.
And they shut up all their. I mean, what's the biggest complaint that you hear about, you know, Pro Tools all the time? Is that it's always tied to the hardware. It's always tied to the hardware. You hear that all the time, and that's what you know. That's what a lot of software. Developers use as a marketing tool that, hey, you can use any interface. And so here they come.
You know what? Another thing I'll say about the big facilities thing, because it is true. A big facility has to lay out a huge amount of money to get a whole bunch of systems, and they don't want to have to retool very often. They can't justify it, whatever. But the truth is, every few years, whether they want to or not, there has to be some sort of switchover. I mean, just think of what Apple did with Snow Leopard, you know, no longer working on G5s.
Oh, no, Apple's great because Apple's the one that makes you keep buying more Apples.
Yeah, but the thing is, but Avid benefits from that hugely because you just have to upgrade. Now, people may not be spending as much as they did a few years ago to do the big retooling. Maybe they're not putting HD3s in every room or whatever. But Avid has a lot of products now that are priced lower that when companies retool, let's say every room that did have an HD3 just ends up with a simple system with an HD Omni just for doing basic cuts. Still, that's great for Avid.
But I know a lot of TV people that are still doing like Pro Tools 6, Pro Tools 7.
Yeah, but you know what?
Because if it worked, it worked. Why change it?
Because I'll tell you why. Eventually, I'm sitting in my studio now with three G5s that all died recently for no friggin' reason. Yeah. They just died. Right. Something happened.
They press a button at Apple.
I think they do. No power surge, and they all died in different ways. But two of them with some motherboard. I mean, just kind of infuriating because you're never going to get them. Well, for the most part, you don't want to get them fixed because a motherboard just isn't worth it. And, you know, so you got to replace them with something else, and that's going to be an Intel, and that means none of your old Pro Tools software is going to work anymore.
Isn't Pro Tools 9 only for Snow Leopard on Mac now?
Yeah, even
I read that somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah, even there were Pro Tools 8s that were only after about 8.03 or 8.04.
Well, it's like at our company.
But you're going to change up. You're going to have no choice.
The dubbing stages are 8, and the editorial, there's only about 4 of us. We have 200 Pro Tools systems.
And you know what? As your G5s start to dissolve, like
I don't know.
A lot
I mean,
of people,
right now, we've just gotten approval to. We're getting all Intels, and we're going Pro Tools 9. We're going to touch an 8.
Right.
So you go from 7 to 9. Right. But as companies, the thing is as
so
most
you just,
companies.
But you just disagreed with yourself.
No, but what I'm saying is we're not buying any more hardware. The software is not that expensive. But the hardware, the purchases of actual hardware, the monitors, the keyboards, we're keeping all that. So, yes, every 3 years, 4 years, we start recycling Macs. Like any business, you've got to get 3 years off of your investment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's not a good investment. It takes about a year to a year and a half to pay for itself. And then you actually got to make profit because you're a company. Otherwise, you're a charity.
But then you're going to go out and buy hundreds of Pro Tools 9 upgrades. So that's a very good thing for Avid.
Oh, absolutely. What I'm saying is, when we talked about saturation, there's a difference between buying software and buying a $12,000, you know, or more full Pro Tools system.
Right.
This will be, you know, $400 or $500 per system. And it's not going to be all the systems. It'll be, you know, slowly.
Well, I think, too, if you're going to be upgrading your system, Pro Tools 9 really gives you a good reason to upgrade, especially if you're coming from a 6.7 or a 7.4 system. Because, for instance, my own system, I do a lot of stuff in LE, and then I do a lot of stuff on my Pro Tools, my big HD3 system. And 8 was good. There was a lot of features in there that were pretty tempting, but really nothing that pushed me over the edge like Pro Tools 9 has, because of the fact that now I have options with sound cards, and then I also have the ability to take it away. So I don't have to have that LE system anymore. I can just have my Pro Tools system. And for me, I do mainly editing on the satellite, you know, on the small system. So it's going to be great.
Oh, LE, it's revolutionary.
Yeah, I get time
HD,
code, I get OMF imports, so I can be able to, you know, I can be at home, and if an editor wants me to, you know, check something really quick, boom, I can download it, open the OMF, and yeah, great, that works. Or, no, that's really horrible. Do it again.
The big problem we found with, which is actually old news, but whatever, the biggest thing wasn't even Pro Tools. It was plugins into an Intel machine.
Right.
And I did a personal, I mean, personally, it probably cost me $300-$400 as a person to get the same plugins that I already had. So it's almost like plugins becomes a subscription business rather than like a piece of hardware. I bought it. I bought it once. I paid the money. I got it. Now plugins, I feel like I keep every couple of years.
And that's what really hurts.
I keep paying just to maintain the plugins I got.
And every time you think you have everything, and you're all updated, all of a sudden you go to use that one plug-in you forgot, and you go, ah, oh, I have to update it. Oh, there's another 50, 100, 200, 300.
39, 40,
And to me, that's what's infuriating.
Yeah,
I agree. Well, and you know what? Snow Leopard was the source of a lot of that.
Right.
Oh, Snow Leopard.
Actually, going up to Intel in general, but Snow Leopard forced a lot of people up to Intel who had fought it.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it was everything happening at the same time, you know, having all these G5s die. And actually, I had a lot of other friends who have had their G5s die recently, and some have replaced motherboards and some have decided not to.
But, wow. Don't tell me that. I'm running a G5 right now, even as we speak.
You know what? My last one has stopped working, and it's just – and I've done nothing wrong.
Yeah. All right. Time to swap out.
I haven't done with my desktop, but almost all my laptops, it seems that if you don't use your Apple laptop for like 6 months, it will not turn back on.
Hmm.
We see, you know, you put it on the shelf, said, hey, I figured I had an old laptop. I'm going to give it to my son. Let him play with it. Hit the button.
Nothing.
It's just dead.
Well, I don't have that. I don't think I go more than 6 minutes without my laptop.
Yeah, really.
Well, it's the old laptop.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, listen. All that's to say, I think Pro Tools 9 is definitely going to be one of those times where we look back and say, wow, that made a significant impact. There's going to be some great stuff going out. And really quick, there's a lot of
listener questions that we had, but we're not going to be able to get to it on this podcast. We'll wait till the next podcast. But I do want to answer one question that I think is pretty relevant, especially to what we're talking about. And Justin sent me a letter. He's one of our listeners, and he wanted to ask us about, you know, what we would recommend if we were on a budget and bare bones and all that. And I think it's pretty important that we answer
Pro Tools 9, HD native. Yeah. There you go. Done.
Well, exactly. I think that's it's pretty important that we answer this question, because we get it a lot. I get it a lot. And first of all, you know, most of the guys here do this professionally, and so we're not necessarily on a bare budget. We work in bigger studios. We do bigger projects. There's some great stuff that's out there that you can, if you go online, you can find some really cool, like Reaper and some other small programs and Audacity and things like that.
I think I can sum this up, if I may.
And then Rob is going to sum it up.
I'm just going to sum this up, because this is a long show, and we all want to go home. You know what? It's better to save up and delay your purchase a little bit until you can buy the right tool. Buying the wrong tool because it's the one you can afford is not doing yourself a favor in the long run. If you need to be using Pro Tools professionally, but you can only afford Logic, but Logic is not going to help your career because it's not what the people around you need you to be using, then you should save up, wait a little longer, and buy Pro Tools because that's what they expect you to have. If you say, I'm going to buy this other thing, or get this free thing, but I'll just work around all the importing and exporting I have to do to be compatible with, you know, my potential clients, you're just fooling yourself. You're going to waste so much time, and your time is worth something. So it's better to delay and buy the right tool. And if it happens to be Pro Tools, you got a lot of options now in different price points. There are very inexpensive ways to get into it. But buying the wrong tool and justifying it and saying, I'm going to figure out a way to make this work, you're just wasting your own time, which is the most valuable
and
thing.
And we've all done that, and we've had garages of crap.
Right.
Yeah,
that we've thrown
it from
away.
Experience.
Absolutely.
I'm
no,
it
it's the same thing. I just cleaned out my garage, and I'm like, I remember this. And it was funny, and I did it with speakers. Mm-hmm. And lots of stuff going, well, I couldn't afford that, but I bought this and this and this.
Yeah, all the
and
time.
This. And you find this like staircase to where you can eventually buy it, realizing you may have spent 10 grand over that amount of time, and you could have just spent 4 grand and got something amazing, but you didn't have the money at the time.
Right. You know what? It's like when you're a kid and you wanted a pair of Adidas, and your mom went and got you the pair that had
Keds.
The 4 stripes. You know? You don't want to be sitting there running the workstation that has the 4 stripes, because you know you still resent her for it. So get the right tool.
Yeah. You know what?
And they're not that expensive anymore.
That was probably the most awesome answer.
I told you I want to go home.
I know. Yeah. But it's so true. It's so true. You get the right tool, and you're right. Everybody has done that. And, you know, if you don't have the money, just go online, search for open source stuff, and you can find little things. But if you're going to spend the money, you're right. Get the right thing. And the reason why I wanted to bring it up, because Pro Tools 9 is a great place to start. You know, that's a good, if you want to know what your entry point is, where you should set that, you know, little red mark on the calendar, like you want to have this, I would start with Pro Tools 9, especially if you want to do it for a living, because that's the common denominator with everybody who's working.
Yeah, you got Logic, Cubase, Performer.
Find out what the people who you hope to work with would most want you to have, too, because that does play a part. You have to be able to interchange with people.
Right.
You have to be easy to go back and forth with.
I mean, you were talking about tape machines, and
that would be the worst way to
interact. Well, no.
Don't start with a
buy a tape machine for $500. No, I was going to say that in the day to own a studio was $1 million. And if anything, you know, compared to, remember, Synclavier's, oh, my God, and we went with WaveFrames, and it went from $1 million to $300,000 to $150,000, and people go, oh, my God, 192 tracks of full console, and it goes to be $10,000? Well, that used to cost $1 million in a studio.
Right.
And I think what's happened when we talk about the low end, to be honest, 90% of it is the low end now.
Right.
And everything is affordable. Beyond this low end, I don't know what to say. Some of the stuff we're talking about, the boutique stuff, is a little more expensive.
Yeah.
But right now, there's a plethora. I mean, one of the most exciting things about audio right now is that it's all affordable by anybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's under $1,000 gets you a lot.
That's right. All I remember is at one time a 9 gigabyte hard drive cost $6,000.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, so you look at that. Well, Rob, thank you for answering that question.
No problem.
Justin, I'm sorry. But it makes a lot of sense. But I did want to bring that in because, like I said, Pro Tools 9, it's a great entry point, especially if you don't have any clients or you just want to get involved, because Scott uses it in sound design. Rob uses it when he scores. I use it when I mix post-production. Bobby uses it because he's just a stud. And
I use it in the music projects.
Yeah, it's in music projects. And so it's just a good place.
Yeah, I got to tell you that, see, you guys don't like Pro Tools 8 for some reason. But to me, it was revelation.
For one
reason, it was the comping feature is fabulous.
Yeah, it is.
It's fabulous, and that made all the difference. When you're trying to comp a vocal and you got 14 of them, you know that's the best way to do it.
But you know what? There was something about that time period. That was the time period when every sequencer seemed to come out with great comping stuff. It's when Logic's comping got great and Cubase's got great. I don't know. For some reason, that was like the fashion. At the same time, all these companies came out with great comping stuff.
Yeah, but you needed Pro Tools if you're going to work, though.
Well, you needed Pro Tools for interchange, but I mean, during that period, most of the albums that were coming to us to work on, especially because it was mostly R&B and hip-hop stuff, it was all coming on Logic. And I always tell people, I mean, don't go into Pro Tools blindly. I mean, I use it. I have a whole bunch of systems and everything, but use the system that's going to make the most sense. There are long time periods where I'm using a Logic because that's what I'm forced to use with my clients. I mean, it doesn't mean I hate it any less, but the idea is you don't turn down a gig. Forced is the word. But you don't turn down a gig. And if my career relied on me using Logic only, I'd be using Logic only. But, you know, Pro Tools, it's hard to even say which one is best or worst or anything. There are things more important than the software itself.
And I think when you look at needing a console and a recording device, Pro Tools excels incredibly.
Right. Well, none of those other systems are as good at consoles.
Exactly. And I think it's almost a de facto standard.
Right.
When you talk about creation tools, compositions, sound design, there's actually half a dozen to a dozen significant alternatives.
Yeah, you don't need to be using Pro Tools.
You don't need to say Pro Tools doesn't really have the advantage or disadvantage. It's just another choice. But when you eventually got to record it and you got to mix it, it's really hard to compete against Pro Tools.
That's the reason I have so many systems that run, you know, Logic and Cubase and Digital Performer and all these other things. But they all feed into Pro Tools rigs, which are the consoles. So even if we're doing a whole project in Logic, it's being mixed in Pro Tools.
Cool. You know. Really quick, why don't you explain a little bit about how you comp in Pro Tools 8, just so people understand what you're talking about.
Well, Pro Tools 8 gives you visible layers. And before, the layers weren't quite as visible. It wasn't quite as easy to do it because you couldn't see everything as easily. Now you have these visible layers, and all you have to do is move a piece, cut and paste. You don't even have to cut and paste it. You just have to cut it, move a piece up to the top layer, done. So it's very easy to listen to each piece, to audition it, and it's very easy once you find the piece that you like to move it to the top layer, and that's your final comp.
Cool.
You can do it faster than I can explain.
Remember the wayframe we place, remember?
Yeah, well, it used to be that you'd have all these playlists, but you could only see one of them at a time, and it became like such a weird juggling act to remember what you had. And I agree, that was a huge step up for Pro Tools 8. My problem with Pro Tools 8 that counterbalanced that is that I'm fairly colorblind, and it's much harder for me to see what's going on the screen. So there's much cooler stuff going on I just can't see. So that's balancing act.
All right, well, we're going to wrap up this podcast. This is a good podcast, man. We covered some really cool things. If I didn't get to your questions this one, we will get to it next one. So hang tight. Before we go, Rob, you working on anything you want to...
To talk about?
Talk about.
Well, we just finished it today, but we heard the client loved it, so it's okay to talk about it. I just scored the music for a... sort of a long-form commercial that will also be cut down for the Multiple Sclerosis Society.
Oh, cool.
Pretty good cause, and it was a pretty cool commercial.
Nice.
And I got to write a bunch of orchestral stuff and do some synth stuff, and it was a lot of fun. And I could have used folder tracks.
Yeah, that's the next podcast. We'll that's the next about podcast. What's wrong with Pro Tools now?
Yeah. And we're actually starting to put up more and more of our history of my company up at noisyneighbors.com. So you should check that out. There's a few reels up there, and some pretty funny stuff will be popping up in the next couple weeks. So I'm going to start to talk about that more. Yeah, I like that there.
Okay. Brandon, what about you? What fun trailers are you working on?
After about a month of romantic comedies, not much sound design to do, we finally have a very exciting new action.
Oh, wait, are you watching the romantic comedies?
Which one?
Are you?
No, all you can put in our romantic comedy is like a swoosh here and there. Oh, but we finally have something cool in, and I'm not going to say what it is, but it's a new Zack Snyder project. Yeah, you know what it is. The guy who did Watchmen and 300. Very, very cool. Very
nice.
Excited about it. So
nice.
Yeah, should be a fun month.
Scott, what about you?
After a year and a half on this, on and off this project, I think there might be a light at the end of this tunnel.
Wow.
We start mixing again tomorrow, and we are rumored to be finishing Friday night.
Holy
of course, we don't know what time. It could be Saturday morning. But, I think we are on the nth. There's a light. I'm just not sure if it's the end of a tunnel or an oncoming train. But, nevertheless, we think we're finishing this, and it's been quite the journey, and I'm kind of looking forward just to, you know, closing this chapter and opening another one, because it's been great. It's been wonderful. I've been dealing with zombie monks for about a year and a half, so it's been fun. And then right after this, I can't see what project it is, but for a video game company, we are being contracted to pretty much fly all over the U.S. recording different military aircraft.
Wow.
So Black Hawks, and we're doing all different types of fighters, and the government has been kind enough to allow us access. I think we start in about a week.
Wow.
Starting that journey, and we have to be finished by beginning of December.
Wow.
Well, hopefully all your contacts were Republicans. That means they probably still have a job.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome. See? I told you. I was jealous.
So hopefully, you know, we'll still be here in one piece when we get back. And
What's going to be your go-to mic for that?
You know, it's interesting. We're discussing. We're having four recordists. And because we have to probably have flak jackets and helmets and be out in the field, we have to be very mobile.
Right.
I need to be in shape. And so it's whatever you can carry and duck, you know. So, we're talking about it. Probably the normal complimentary DPAs, Neumann, Sankins. We have to figure out high pressure microphones.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be very, very loud.
Right.
Also different miking techniques. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to point a mic at the object. Sometimes it makes sense to point the mic somewhere else and to get first reflections.
Well, when you're done with that, we should definitely talk about it.
Yeah.
That sounds like it'd be a really interesting podcast.
Because the thing is, it's like one of those, you don't get a second take.
Right.
Because they're not necessarily doing it for us. We're going to be a fly on the wall, you know. Fly us to Pakistan, you know. Hey, we're in Afghanistan. Oh, shit.
Excuse me. Can you have that plane land again? We didn't quite get it on this first time.
Yeah, you know, either that we'll put one of the guys in the cockpit and, you know, do the vomit comet.
Bobby, what about you? I will say, hey, Bobby, what was kind of cool was at the AES show, if you go into, I forgot what publisher it was, but there was a big old poster of your Music 3.0 book.
Oh, it was Hal Leonard, yeah.
Actually, Hal Leonard.
Two of my publishers were there. At AES, I gave two sessions, Social Media for Musicians and Engineers, Part 1 and Part 2, on Friday and Saturday, then had book signing after each one, and which everything went very well, so it was
great.
A really good show for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I just saw that big old Bobby Osiski. I was like,
yeah. Promoted me very well.
You know, you see that, and you see Scott with your Waves.
Yeah, I wanted to do a plug on that. Is that go to the Waves, waves.com, And there was a sound designer pack that Charles Dean and myself worked with Waves and putting together what we thought was a great collection of Waves plugins for the money.
Yeah.
And we called it, consider it what we call the essentials.
Right.
And it's a great deal for the money, and highly recommend it to all the upcoming sound designers.
Yeah, that's cool. And then you see Andrew on Pro Tools 9 video with the beard cam.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah, so, you know, we got
And Andrew's not doing much, but I think the beard is coming out with a plug-in.
So look for
fuzzy
that.
One. Yeah. Look so for that.
That's cool. You guys, I feel so proud of all of you. So, yeah, that's cool. Well, that's great. Great, good things on that. And
how about you, Mike?
Let's see. I finished mixing Toshiba. Mixed some commercials for the laptops. So that'll be coming out with T-Pain. It's actually pretty funny.
Really?
It's pretty funny commercials. Yeah, so that's kind of fun. And actually, we shot the first couple episodes of Audio Outcast Spaces, and that's going really, really well, except for the 18-hour day that I had to do when I got back to L.A. But besides that, it was really cool. So looking forward to shooting more of those. And those are going to land around our 100th podcast, so be looking for those in the new year.
Cool.
So some great things are happening. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at our Facebook page at facebook.com/audionowcast, or you can send us an email at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And I do want to say, if you send me an email and we don't reply to your we don't answer your question on air, odds are we've probably already answered it during the shows, so don't be offended if we don't answer every
So listen
question.
To all 100 upcoming shows.
No, it doesn't have to be that bad, but we do. But I will say that really quick, I got to give a shout-out to Lee Pierce. He's from New Zealand, and he's going to be coming out to join us. And Lee, I just want to tell
right
you,
a Kiwi.
Just send me an email when you get in town, and we'll hook you up, because yes, you can sit in on the podcast and meet everybody. Just ask Jeremy.
Hey,
he's still here.
Never left.
We got to thank Jeremy. Jeremy is doing a great job. By the way, he's the one who's editing and mixing all the shows now.
Yay.
So Jeremy's doing a great job.
All right, Jeremy.
Yeah,
Jeremy.
He's also, you know, writing the little blurbs. So. Thank goodness for help.
Yeah.
Hey, just really quick. Also, if you're interested in checking out game sound design stuff, I'm reading a book right now, which is actually really good. I think Scott knows the guy that wrote it, actually, Rob Bridget.
Yeah, Rob Bridget.
Yeah, it's called From the Shadows of Film Sound, and I just wanted to throw in a plug for that really quick, because it's really, really good. Like, I'm 3/4 of the way through, and I can't set it down. I wish I was reading it right now. No, I'm just kidding.
See, you know what?
Oh, just for that, edit out your own plug.
Is he not one of us? He's totally on the edge of his seat by a game audio book.
It's like a zombie movie. You're one of us now.
All right, well, hey, for myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.